morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here. We've had Ronald Reagan, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Fred Thompson. Al Franken may be the latest entertainer to join the American government. He and his counterpart, or his competitor, I guess, Norm Coleman, face off today in Minnesota's Supreme Court. It could be decided. What entertainer do you see in office besides these names? Persephone writes to us, Martin Sheen for president and Allison Janney for vice president.
Thanks a lot. I wish I could spend more than a few minutes with you, but the polls don't close in the East for another hour, and there are plenty of election results still left to falsify.
I don't know if we want to cancel Obama yet and replace him with the West Wing. Tell us your stories at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Now to news on the frontier of cancer research. In an oncology conference that's probably the most important meeting on cancer research in its kind in the world, a conference of oncologists in Orlando, Florida, there's been a lot of cutting-edge science discussed as well as healthcare policy. Joining me now is Len Lichtenfeld. He's the Deputy Chief Medical Officer for the American Cancer Society, and he's in Orlando where this conference was held. It's the American Society of Clinical Oncology meeting, and it's very, very important. Len, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
First of all, the scientific headline, there's been talk of something called a cancer vaccine, but it's more of a genetic therapy for cancer. Am I right? And explain the details, if you could.
Well, John, it's interesting. It is, in fact, a vaccine in the sense that we've been looking for years, decades, in fact, for almost, I would say, at least 40 years, as long as I've been involved in cancer treatment and cancer research. We've been looking for something that where we can take the body's own natural defense mechanisms, our immune system, rev it up, and use that to fight cancer. And we've had so many false starts and false hopes. But this year, at this meeting, we actually have some papers that have been presented to suggest that maybe we're finally starting to sort of turn to success, shall we say. And there have been a couple of papers reported that look promising in the sense that we may have figured out how to get a vaccine that may help us effectively treat cancer.
Now, why is it that even in these papers that were presented, the longevity of this vaccine is limited? Is it that the cancer changes to trick the immune system, or the effect of the immune system activation in some of these therapies doesn't last very long?
Well, probably a combination of the two. You know, it's been very complicated. You know, we've known for years that cancer cells have differences on their surfaces that, you know, just like a bacteria or a virus or whatever, you know, our bodies fight these things because there are differences in the cells and the bacteria and the virus cells that set off triggers that help our bodies recognize the invader, so to speak, and develop antibodies. Cancer has those same things. But cancer is a very wily disease. I mean, it's not just one change here or one change there, and it's not always consistent. In some cancers, there are consistent changes, but not in every cancer. And being able to harness that, to be able to identify that change and make an effective vaccine that works on that person's cancer has been tough. There's another paper yesterday, not about vaccines, but it was a presentation talking about the genetics of cancer. And we finally have gotten to the point where we really understand what makes a cancer cell, but we've also learned that each individual cancer, that is a colon cancer one person, a colon cancer another person, they're different. They're not necessarily the same. So being able to take those cells from that patient, process them, return them, make them effective in terms of developing this immune response has really been quite a challenge.
So the strategy of using a person's own body as the defense mechanism really becomes even more important with that kind of research. I'm wondering how the American Society of Clinical Oncology and all the people at the world's largest annual cancer conference are feeling about their field as the Obama administration prepares for a major sort of restructuring, at least that's what they're talking about, of the healthcare system.
I would venture to say that they're a little bit concerned. You know, we've learned a lot about cancer treatment over the past 30 years. There's no question about that. But by the same token, a lot of the treatments we offer are what we call off-label. That means they're effective. They've been shown in scientific research to work, but they've not been approved by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, for that particular use. And it's becoming more and more clear going forward in healthcare reform that we may have higher standards of evidence, shall we say, in order to use certain treatments in certain diseases, not just in cancer, but in diseases in general. And I venture to say that there's a little bit of concern that with health care reform and the concerns about costs, that there might be, shall we say, an increased focus on what we do, how we do it, the treatments we use. Now, I have to say that in part that's not all bad. We spend a tremendous amount of money on health care in this country. We do a lot of things in this country that don't necessarily help patients. But there is a concern that in this effort to try to become more focused, more evidence-based, that we may actually go a little bit too far and perhaps take some of the treatments we now know to be effective and may put some restrictions on those treatments and may put some restrictions on those various diagnostic tests and some of that
sure.
technology.
Well, Len, what do you say to the argument that the off-label world, the off-label domain, is an opportunity for pharmaceutical companies to go around the regulation and that that's really hard for consumers to keep track of, let alone creating troubling questions about what's the regulation even for?
Well, you're absolutely correct. We've run into some trouble. Most recently, I think the best example are drugs we call ESAs or erythropoietin, and those are drugs that were used to boost the red cell count. And a tremendous number of the uses of those drugs, or times they were used, shall we say, were in off-label situations. And it turns out, after, good golly, since 1990, when we started using those drugs, it turns out that, in fact, we may have been harming a substantial number of patients in the off-label use. Eventually, we have to come to a balance. We know that certain drugs are used effectively off-label. We have to develop a structure that's reasonable, appropriate, somewhat middle of the ground. We're never going to be perfect. We can't be too strict. We can't be too liberal. We have to figure out a way how to harness our knowledge, harness consensus, harness scientific expert consensus in order to make sure we use the drugs as appropriately as possible while not causing harm.
Well, finding that balance will certainly be part of the debate in healthcare reform. That's the expression of an oncologist, or at least the chief medical officer for the American Cancer Society, Len Lichtenfeld, as oncologists around the world think about healthcare reform in the United States and how it's going to affect cancer research. The meeting over the weekend in Orlando, the largest annual meeting on cancer research. Len, thanks so much.
And thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.